This is the DMT One-to-One Show, episode 24 on the 28th of August 2013, an interview with Adam Perry, CEO at Bandab. And the DMT One-to-One Show this week is sponsored by Sheridans at sheridans.co.uk. This is the DMT One-to-One Show, and it's great this week to have Adam Perry on from Bandab. And hi, Adam, and great to have you on the show. How's it going today?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, not bad. Good to be here. Yeah, nice to be back. We've been at Reading Festival all weekend, so it's nice to be back behind the desk.
That's awesome. And you've been on tour for the past sort of month and a half, so it's taken us a while to catch up, but it's awesome to have you on. And we're going to talk about Bandab today, and there's lots to talk about, essentially. So first of all, I don't believe I've had you on the show before. So first of all, talk us through what Bandab is and what the general idea of the company is.
Okay, yeah. Well, Bandab is essentially, it's a tool, platform for bands to go make an app for free. So whether you're an app, a venue or an artist or a DJ or a festival, you can go into bandab.com and you can make an app instantly for free. Yes. And then share it for free to your fans in minutes. So, and the whole idea was, just, you know, from a musician background and being on tour a lot and seeing how fans communicate with bands and also seeing the bottlenecks that are potentially the app store, where there may be a fee involved, there may be a 3-week delay involved.
Yeah.
And then fans have got to go and go through the app store, and you know, you're bombarded with LinkedIn and Angry Birds and all kinds of cool stuff. But for music apps, they're sort of lost.
Yeah.
So the idea was to create our own space, our own platform, our own store. So once you've made your band app, it sits with like-minded bands, not with other apps that don't really have anything to do with the music space.
Exactly. And one of the big things about Bandab is also the community you create around all the different artist apps. So it means that if I go and check out an alternative rock band, then I might be presented with other alternative rock band apps that I might want to go and check out. And so that's really a key part of being able to make this app discoverable for music fans, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things we sort of say on our splash page is that, you know, you can go and you can find new fans and you can build an app for free and people can explore your content. And that's what we're really making big inroads into this year, is making that even better, so that once you've made your band app, it just doesn't sit there. People can discover it. And so within every band app, you've got the explore button. When you go to explore, like-minded band apps appear, and you'll very soon be able, from today, you can add those to your record box. So if you're a fan, you can create a record box, which is essentially just like bookmarks of your favorite band apps that you can spring around to. And so you can add a band to your record box, or you can open the app. And then there's a whole activity wall, so people know if you've added it to your record box, it shows it's been their activity and people can follow you. So we just brought on board today followers and following for the first time, and also activity for the first time. So it's very infant stage today, but that's something we've been working on for six months now to really hone down the fan side of it. But we think the platform for bands is pretty good. It's a good offering. It's free. You can make an app for free and off you go. But the fan side of it needed some work, and that's what we've been doing now, and they're all kind of coming together.
Yeah.
In a big collage.
A big collage. That's great. Yeah. And so talking about the technology side of things, how have you seen the HTML5 sort of adoption and implementation evolve? I know that there were some kinks at the beginning, especially. Some companies have found that HTML5 wasn't powerful enough for them, or for example, Facebook went and rewrote their whole native app into native iOS language because it wasn't fast enough for their users. But for an application like this, it seems like a great solution. At the same time, you know, have you seen the adoption of HTML5 apps and also the technology evolve alongside that?
I think there's a little bit of a learning curve, a little bit of education to be done for users. You always get someone that's going to go, this isn't an app, it's a website, you know, and that's social media for you. So we have to, every now and again, we probably get one a month. We don't get an awful lot of that.
Yeah.
But so there's a little bit of education. But, you know, I think the speed of the apps work really well. We've got offline mode now, which we had to do for festivals. So the key part of your content sits offline and caches to the phone.
Yeah.
So it's not just about speed of Wi-Fi or 3 or 4G. You can use it on a plane, which is really good for conferences and for festivals. And we spent a lot of time honing that down. It works well for Bandab. It's not going to work well for everyone, and I can see why Facebook had problems. But having said that, if we ever do go the native route, it will never be for Bandabs. Bandabs will always stay as an HTML5, but we may do a native kind of band app explore mothership app at some point that brings all this stuff together. But I think we'll be really grateful that we've always had that HTML5 stepping stone.
Yeah.
Because I think you need it, you know, to you can't just drive someone straight to an native app. All you can do is drive them to an app store. And then it's up to them whether they download it or not. They may not have an iTunes account. They may not have a credit card to get an iTunes account. And so it's, you know, it's really important for us that we are HTML5 and that bad apps can be created instantly and shared and downloaded instantly. And as we were saying before, we just got stats from Reading Festival. So we did the app for Reading this year. And yeah, 21,000 downloads of that just from that one weekend, just at one festival. Which is way more than the native app last year.
Yeah.
So it shows you the behavior patterns. We're not changing behavior. People are used to sharing links and downloading links and bookmarking and it seemed fine. So yeah, there's a speed issue. And I think if you're Facebook, obviously there is going to be a big speed issue because you've got so much data.
Yeah.
But for us at this point, it's absolutely fine. And yeah. The new versions of, the new versions of software we're using to make band apps are increasing in speed all the time, and so it's only going to get better.
Yeah, and looking at the Reading, you were talking about that. Did you have any correlations with, for example, bands that have band app apps, and whether that had an effect on their downloads and stuff like that?
Yeah,
we did. It's early days, but you know,
it's all we did. I think one of the things we can do a better job with is. We'd like band app to become the place that you submit all your artist information to a festival from. So you use a kind of white label landing page for say a festival like, you know, Glastonbury or whatever, or Reading and Leeds or Team the Park. And the promoter needs basic information, it needs a biography, it needs an iTunes link, it needs a YouTube link, it needs your Twitter page, your Twitter account, stuff like that, so they can go and market your band.
Yeah.
Recent JPEG. Well, Band App Builder asks you all those things. So it could become a really good gateway into supplying information to our two promoters that they need to market artists on their behalf.
Yeah.
And then the artist can choose whether to go and build a full band app or just submit some of his information. And we can do a better job with that next year in the festival circuit, and we will do. Having said that, lots of bands at Reading this year already have band apps, and they're the bands we've been interviewing. So we've been taking our time out every day to have content on Band App TV from our Band App bands who are there. And it was about 15 a day that we were doing. So, yeah, and those bands are getting bigger and bigger. And as we start going to doing the deals with record labels, which is just about to start, they will get, enormous. So, that's not going to be a problem for us. I think, most people have seen it so far, like, okay, let's go. Let's start building Band Apps. And it's kind of us that are putting the barriers on that, because we're about to launch version 2.
Yeah.
So we just want to make sure V2's out and looking good, and then we're going to go hell for leather with kind of major label artists as well.
Yeah, and I guess also the other benefit with the HTML5 is that you can gauge the effectiveness of an app pretty quickly. So if a big band wanted to try out your service, they might, misdirect their fans for a bit if they see that it's not working, but if they see it's working, then in 2 weeks they've created something that is creating a whole new community. So that's quite exciting, instead of having to wait months for development or anything like that.
Yeah, so it's great for artists that can do that. You can dive back in, and the new version of Band App, they can dive back in on the phone as well, so you can edit your Band App on the go.
Yeah.
Which is going to be really important. But it's also great for us as a business, because we can introduce features all the time and see within minutes whether they're working or pull them or expand them or iterate them.
Yeah.
And people don't really even know, but we're just constantly updating and iterating throughout the feature set. And it's really hard to do that if you've got a native app. People have got to constantly update it. And, we band app as soon as we push anything live, everyone updates. And it's great for us launching new products like Rekordbox, which we're about to launch. But things like that are invaluable, that we can just get in there and test the water. Within 5 minutes whether it's going to work or whether you need to tweak something.
Yeah.
But you're not handcuffed to updates.
Yeah, sure. And also, just talking about third-party integrations, I wanted to ask you, it's always important for an app like Band App to be fairly linear and simple in the way that bands set up the whole application and the process, and not make it too cluttered. At the same time, I'm sure bands want more and more third-party apps or services to be integrated within the band app, going from the simplest one like Twitter to stuff like Pinterest or whatever else, they may be using on the social media front. So how do you decide what you integrate and what you don't integrate into the service?
I think one of the benefits we have is that we're all from a music background, So everybody is part of the team. Bandup is a music company as well as a tech company. When we look to employ someone or look to take a new team member on, it's, you know, their background needs to be within music as well. So we all understand, hopefully, what an artist needs or a festival needs. And from that mindset, we can kind of gauge what services we need to pull in and what services we should leave out. And the new version of Bandapp will have ticketing services. It will have Songkick and stuff like that integrated, and stuff that bands really need, you know. And we'll leave out stuff that bands don't need. And I think the biggest thing for us was, we want Bandapp to be a place where you come and you make content and you push content out. But we're also really worried that, you know, that's not going to happen overnight. And we need to be a place that self-aggregates and pulls things in. And the new version of Bandapp does that a lot more. So V2 will pull virtually everything in. You can create Bandapp in 3 steps.
Yeah.
And then you can go deeper and obviously, you know, really get involved in the design side of it and tweak it. But if you're on the go, within 3 steps, you've got a Bandapp that just pulls in from all your stuff, which is important. And it's taken us a while to get that stuff involved, but the new version will do that. And then we'll see an awful lot more activity as Bandapps self-generate, I suppose.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And it's, you know, there's a big opportunity there also for, it's an interesting place for all sorts of content creators to actually refer back to, especially if they work on the audio front like I do. So I've actually created a Bandapp if anybody wants to check it out. It's you can search for Digital Music Trends on bandapp.com, and I'll be sure to update it a little bit as well to make it look a bit nicer. So there's a few customized banners and stuff that I can create now, so that's great. And finally, of course, there's the monetization question that I always ask sort of towards the end of an interview. We'll be talking about a free app, of course. Aside from that, what are the plans for the company, and how do you monetize with additional features, for example?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for us, you know, I never wanted Bandapp to be a premium service or a freemium service. So there's never going to be a free to use version or a free trial, and then there's going to be a really cool, you know, thing that costs you $15 a month.
Yeah.
It's always going to be free. It's always going to be free to bands. It's always going to be free to fans. And what we want to do, we think there's a major gap on mobile. There's a major... someone needs to really take the music community by the scruff of its neck on mobile. And we don't think MySpace particularly did it well. The new version of MySpace looks great, but I've never really gone to it on mobile. And I don't think anybody that has yet. And also, we think, you know, Spotify works really well on desktop. And the activity is really cool on Spotify. I love the way they've done that. But on mobile, you've got to pay for it to work on mobile. So that's missing. And we think the power of Bandapp is about building this big community of music fans. It's when you go on a date, it's generally the second or third question you ask someone.
Yep.
You know, where they're from, what they're doing for a job, what kind of music they're into. And music connects everyone, as we know. And so for us, it's really important that we build the biggest community of like-minded music fans, talking to each other, talking to artists, using our ecosystem that we control. And then we think we're in a really powerful place to have a real good e-commerce platform that not only benefits our artists, but also benefits us as a business, and also benefits advertisers. And when I say advertisers, I include our users in that. So we'd like to get to a stage where a band can run its own campaign through a Bandapp, just like on Facebook. So we're not just going to have the big brands, we're allowing bands to reach other fans and then potentially run campaigns through Bandapp. And that's one of the things we're really looking at, making sure we've got the biggest community possible, making sure it's a real valid community that's talking about stuff that people want to hear about, so people are reconnecting and going back in every day. And then we think it's got a real, it becomes a really powerful tool for a band that's releasing an EP or is releasing a tour or is about to put something on sale or just wants to share some T-shirts.
Yeah.
So instead of use Facebook and Twitter and everything else that's out there, use Bandapp for it. And all the tools will be there for them to go and sell their wares and market themselves on Bandapp. And that's what we're really aiming for.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we're not looking at bringing advertising in at all, per se. We've got our own kind of marketing tool, which is called Bandapp, where a brand can make an app, and then we can place that into people's Bandapp streams.
Yeah.
But between that and the e-commerce side of it, we think there's an incredible platform for monetizing and really monetizing.
That's great.
That's we want to make sure that we, I think, you know, we want to make sure we sort of own the conversation, I guess is what I'm saying. So it's, you know, we're nearly there. It takes a while.
It always does. It always does. Well, thanks so much, Adam. It was great talking to you. And again, it's bandapp.com. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yep.
And thanks for listening. Digital Music Trends is available on digitalmusictrends.com. You can also check out the weekly news show that we record on Wednesday and usually comes out on a Thursday night or Friday morning. Thanks for so much for listening. And I'm going to leave you with a word from our sponsors. Thank you. I'm here with Tahir Bashir this week from Sheridan's, and we're going to talk about artists and contracts. And so contracts are central to an artist's career, whether it's a management deal, a label deal, or anything like that. And how do you help them navigate through these agreements and help them understand them?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of contracts are quite complicated, and whilst artists nowadays are more commercially savvy than they have ever been, you know, you're still talking about legal agreements and how they fit together. So if you've got an artist now who's a musician but also has other interests, so maybe fashion, maybe TV, maybe film, maybe endorsements, you've got to make sure that your contracts all fit in together. It's like a matrix of arrangements. So the first things first is making sure that artists understand what they're entering into. So having the skill to be able to explain things in layman's terms and simple terms and give a bit of guidance around those.
Yeah, sure. And artists can be quite intimidated by, you know, the amount of clauses and decisions they have to make around the deal. And so they might have a lot of questions. And so how approachable are lawyers? And I know that artists can be quite intimidated by having to deal with a law firm and having to call an office and everything like that. Are you quite approachable in that sense?
I hope so. We're human beings. We're not demons. I mean, other lawyers may shy away from being a bit less formal. But you know, in this industry, we're surrounded by creatives. All of our clients are creatives. So ultimately, you have to be approachable. So you know, we don't necessarily wear suits, and just generally try and talk in relaxed, engaging terms. So it's important that artists feel comfortable with you, because it's that old adage: no question is a silly question. You want the artist to be able to ask you questions, and you need to be able to explain it to them in simple terms.
Yeah, sure. And is it quite tough to stand between artists, managers, the labels when you are negotiating a deal? Is there a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, trying to get the best deal you can for your artist?
There can be, yeah. I mean, the idea is to try and simplify and shrink all of those negotiations as much as you can, because obviously the longer it runs, the more momentum you lose from a deal, the more expensive it gets. Yeah. So the idea is to try and shrink it all together. And once you've got when you've got enough experience, you can deal with things over the phone, you can have meetings. It doesn't always have to be email to-ing and fro-ing. Sure. And also a good experienced music lawyer should be able to help an artist make decisions and not just effectively be there to wait for the artist to tell them what to do. So you should be able to guide them and say, well, I think you should be doing this based on what I've seen. This is reasonable, this is not reasonable.
Yeah, that's good. Awesome, thank you, and till next week. If you enjoyed the show, remember to check out our weekly music tech news show on digitalmusictrends.com.